Welcome to Public Historians at Work, a podcast of the Center for Public History at the University of Houston. I'm Dr. Mark Goldberg, Associate Professor of History and Interim Director of CPH. In this podcast series, we speak with academics, practitioners, activists, and community members about what it means to do history and humanities work for and with the public. In our third season, we're highlighting the innovative public history projects of the University of Houston and the creative faculty, staff, and students behind them. For more resources on these topics and ways to support the mission of CPH, make sure to check us out at uh.edu/class/CPH or find us on social media at UHCPHistory. Together, we can help reclaim our past.
In the practice of public history, how the wider community receives a project is just as important as the intentions behind its creation. As work done for and with public audiences, the exhibits, media, and spaces we cultivate form a dialogue where agency is shared, emotions are welcome, and diverse experiences are honored. As Dr. Stephen Veeder comments in an earlier episode, quote, "I think that we place so much emphasis on the intellectual value of our research, but I think many people engage with history in a much more bodily and affective way, in an emotional way, and I like how public history draws that out." Unquote. In this spirit, join public history graduate student Araceli Lara, a first-generation Mexican-American, as she processes the 100 years of stories documenting a century at the University of Houston exhibit and finds radical hope in the perseverance of alumni before her. Let's listen in.
My name is Araceli Lara, and I am heartbroken. I am halfway through my first year of the Master's Public History program. It's great, but as I am the eldest daughter and a first-generation Mexican-American student, I must learn to navigate grad school by myself and balance and mediate between housework, family conflicts, and schoolwork, and, well, everything that could go wrong in my romantic life is happening. I feel unprepared. I keep asking myself to control this downheartedness, to fulfill my responsibilities as a grad student, yet I am growing frustrated. I am steering myself to a safe haven, the University of Houston's library. I feel my eyes softening as I reach the library's 100 Years of Stories exhibition. The 100 Years of Stories, documenting a century at the University of Houston exhibit is a collaboration between the Center for Public History, Houston Public Media, and the MD Anderson Libraries. Its goal is to preserve and share histories that show the ways in which the University of Houston students have shaped the city of Houston through innovation and activism. The space is busy with students scrambling to find open study spaces, couples leaning on each other watching videos together, and people shuffling around me to observe the rest of the exhibit since we're on a passageway filled with sofas for visitors. As I look around, I feel the exhibition gently waking up the optimist in me. The histories pulling me away from my dejection are those of Yolanda Navarro, Maria Jimenez, and Graciela Sáenz, based on articles published in the Houston History magazine. They were Mexican-American students at the University of Houston when the university was a majority white institution. Observing their stories of perseverance, I feel my grief slowly morph into radical hope. Radical, as in changing the fundamental nature of something. Hope, as in trusting the future despite the uncertainty or outcome. Radical hope. A deep-rooted faith grounded in the belief in a brighter future grounded in history. These women prevailed through tumultuous times while pursuing a degree in higher education, helping their families and communities. I find inspiration to strive forward and channel my inner power through these stories. I find hope in Yolanda Navarro's meticulous ability to balance schoolwork, family time, and community work. In 1973 UH alumna, Navarro grew up in Houston in a family of six children raised by a single mother. Her mother, Velia, established a close relationship with other women in the neighborhood to uplift and sustain each other. Yolanda therefore grew up surrounded by Hispanic-serving institutions in a supportive community. Only when she started high school in a predominantly white area did she begin to feel othered. Navarro noticed a sudden change in people's behavior towards her once they realized she was Mexican. Despite hierarchical and social difficulties, Navarro initiated successful and positive change in her community. In 1970, while a student at UH still working full-time to support her family, Yolanda joined with other influential Mexican-Americans like Froilan Hernandez, Roland Lorenzo, and William Navarro to found the Association for Advancement of Mexican-Americans. This organization created recreational and extracurricular activities for children in the city. Later in 1987, she helped organize the Navigation Area Business Association.
In the Latino community, I guess one of the things that you see is that there is a drive to have your own business. And there's so many different avenues of business that are easy to do from the standpoint of it's easy to open, you know, it's hard to keep it running, but it's easy to open, you know, a Mexican restaurant.
Shortly after that, she led NAVA to establish Shoes for Kids, a charitable organization providing shoes for underserved children. In 2015, in recognition of her service, the city of Houston celebrated November 3rd as Yolanda Black Navarro Day. As I move through the exhibit, I find hope in Maria Jimenez's courageousness in fighting to help anyone facing oppression. Jimenez's family migrated from Coahuila, Mexico to Houston in 1957 when she was six. Jimenez enrolled in Franklin Elementary School where she encountered anti-Mexican sentiments as a first grader. The school administration prohibited the use of Spanish at school, and Jimenez faced expulsion if she were caught speaking Spanish there. She became hesitant to speak up in class, and when she asked other Latino students for help, they threatened to report her for speaking Spanish. At home, the exact opposite was true, as her family celebrated their heritage. Jimenez's family did not speak English at home. Her grandfather taught her Mexico's history, which helped her keep her cultural pride alive. As a teenager, Jimenez was finally able to contextualize her struggle with the language of social justice. While working with the Catholic youth organization in Immaculate Heart, she learned about the Rio Grande strike and the farmers of South Texas who fought for higher pay. She listened to the priests and organization members who thought that they should collect donations and food for the workers. Later, while studying at the University of Houston, Jimenez put this knowledge to work as a community organizer, as a member of the League of Mexican American Students and then the Mexican American Youth Organization, or MAYO. She helped recruit Latino students to attend UH at the time when it was a predominantly white institution. Jimenez was also actively involved in establishing the Center for Mexican American Studies program. She recalled the Latino students taking over the president's office, Dr. Fields, vice president of academics, admitting he was afraid of her after she stormed his office to protest administrators using a fund that the state legislator had designated for underserved students.
I remember taking over the the president's office, and I remember. So they knew we would do things of this nature, and so. And actually, I had the experience of the vice president of academics, Dr. Fields, when we caught them red-handed using a fund that the state legislature had appropriated for minority students scholarships. They were using it to enhance their graduate programs, giving them only to graduate students, whether they were minority or not. And so we caught them red-handed, and we got both the state legislature to call them up and made it a public issue and so forth. And he told me, he said, okay, I'm afraid of you, what do you want? You know, so we did have an impact on them, and so we got to a point where we were getting more concessions.
Jimenez often joined sit-ins at the president's office with people from other movements, finding camaraderie with the Afro-Americans for Black Liberation, as well as Iranian and LGBTQ+ and feminist organizations. Finally, I find hope in Graciela Sáenz's will to move forward despite the murkiness of any situation. Sáenz grew up as the middle child of 9 in Houston, in Barrio El Crisol. Sáenz's father, Juan Guzmán, was born in Houston in 1920. Despite being a U.S. citizen, Guzmán was deported along with his family and other Mexicanos in 1933. During the Great Depression, the United States scapegoated people of color as responsible for the economic turmoil. Sáenz's father returned to Houston during the 1950s through the Bracero program, a U.S. labor program from 1942 to 1964, which hired Mexicans as guest workers and granted them temporary contracts to work in the U.S. Sáenz's family history and witnessing intolerance for Mexicans instilled in her a deep need to fight against oppression. Sáenz credits her teachers for encouraging her to pursue a higher education at the University of Houston. She received her bachelor's degree in Spanish in 1976 and began working as a paralegal for immigration attorney Charles Foster. After working for Foster for 6 years, she met her mentor, Judith Cooper, an attorney from Venezuela who convinced her to pursue law school. During Sáenz's tenure as president of Chicano Law Student Association, it was discovered that financial aid cases for students of color took longer to process. In response, Sáenz with other Chicano students organized a fundraiser to aid students. While the Law Center was hesitant to distribute the funds at first, community leaders gathered to pressure the center that eventually distributed the aid to the underserved students. In 1986, all in a single year, Sáenz gave birth, received her Juris Doctorate, and passed the bar exam. The pressure forced her to believe she could accomplish anything after the turbulent time.
The thing I remember most about my last semester of law school is the fact that I was pregnant for the third time and ended up having a baby in the middle of the semester. Trying to figure out how I was going to do it, but God was gracious with me. He's always been there, and great sense of humor. So I had the baby in March, graduated in May, and took the bar exam in July. So there you go. I kind of figured if, you know, I could handle that, I could handle a lot of other pressure.
As a lawyer, Sáenz helped Salvadorians seeking political asylum, victims of family domestic violence, and incarcerated teenagers. Frustrated while looking back at the injustice and unfairness in the system she witnessed through her family, schooling, and career, Sáenz was encouraged to run for city council. Despite the uncertainties, Sáenz's 1991 campaign for city council was successful. Thank you. The exhibit, 100 Years of Stories, showcases the strength of Navarro, Jimenez, and science, and reveals the history of resilience of the people who came before them. These three women often reflected on their families and communities, who they credit for instilling tenacity within them. Exhibits like this have healing properties that inspire us to look towards history to mend and overcome our struggles. I offer these snippets of the 100 Years of Stories exhibit, interviews, and articles as glimpse into the lives of these wonderful Mexican-American women who have inspired me with hope as a Mexican-American graduate student. Come find your own sense of hope from the exhibit with stories from the Afro-Americans for Black Liberation or Phyllis Randolph Fry, an LGBTQ+ rights pioneer. If you are on the UH campus, visit the second floor of the MD Anderson University of Houston's library. You can also read about these amazing figures and organizations in the Houston History Magazine at houstonhistorymagazine.org, or watch spotlights of 100 Years of Houston at houstonpublicmedia.org. You can also listen to the full conversation with Maria Jimenez, Yolanda Black, Navarro, and Graciela Sáenz at UH Library Special Collection and the University of North Texas Portal to Texas History. It is difficult to grieve, especially when many things demand your attention, but I urge you to hold on and to look towards history for strength and radical hope.
Thank you for joining us for this special episode of Public Historians at Work. To learn more about the Center for Public History and support student work like this episode, find us at uh.edu/class/CPH or on social media at UHCP History. Remember, we are all keepers of our history.